Welcome to Rookie Meg. Thanks for joining us. But before we get into the podcast, I want to tell you a little bit about my game plan. Just what exactly you got yourself into here. We're going to focus on pre-hospital medicine and what we really do in the field. I want to break down all kinds of topics from scene management to patient assessment, talk about anatomy, physiology, pathophysiology, fitness, and even research. Any topics on the table. So if you're just new to the field or you've been doing it a while, one of my very favorite parts of this job is that if we're open to it, we can learn something every single day. My goal with Rookie Med is that we can give you something to think about and maybe even use on your next shift. So let's get started. Today's topic is scene control. What that means to me is when you walk onto a scene, how do you own it? How do you take charge? I want to start here because this is where every call starts and it can really make or break things for you. Now, before we get into it, I want to let you know that this isn't going to be a focus on scene safety. That's definitely going to need its own podcast or maybe even two. Again, these are my own views and opinions. Remember to make sure you're operating within your scope of practice, to your license level, and within your organization's policy and procedure. Strategy. You gotta have a game plan. Every good game starts with a plan. Whether it's football, soccer, hockey, the really good ones never, ever, ever step onto the field without knowing exactly what their role is and how they fit into the play. You gotta have a game plan. And this is the first part of controlling your scene. Have you ever seen little kids play soccer or hockey? It's kind of awesome. They just like mob the ball and run around in this giant pack of 20 kids crowding the ball. It's total chaos. It's disorganized. It's a mess. This is exactly what it looks like to have no game plan. If you went into a scene like that, it would be utter chaos. These kids don't really have assigned roles. Everybody does what they want when they want to do it. Now, look at the professional game, professional sports, professional hockey, football, soccer, whatever you want to play. Every single player has a role. There's a plan. It's rehearsed, and everybody knows exactly how they fit into it. It's clean. It's fast. It's organized. Smooth. That's what a game plan looks like. A great sports play. So when you're at work, you gotta make sure you know your role. It sounds really stupid. Come onto your shift. Everybody knows whether you're driving or attending that day. Maybe you flip a coin. Maybe you've got a set pattern. Everybody likes to do things a little bit differently, and it never hurts to check. Let's say you've been working with somebody you always work with. Maybe they're your work wife, your work husband. You've been partners so long, you can read each other's minds. Maybe you don't need to focus a ton of energy on this. That being said, anytime I work with a new partner, before I even get our first call, I like to ask and clarify, what do you like your partner to do on a call? You know, I've worked with people who like their partner to do a set of vitals for them, or some of them that like to go get some medications, whereas some of them, if you touch their paperwork, they're going to have a snap show. Clarifying that before you're actually in the play, pretty important. The high acuity game plan. So it's great to talk about, yeah, I like to take vitals. I don't like you to do my paperwork. This would be awesome. Thank you. But when the high acuity call comes in, regardless of who I'm working with, when I go into that call, I make a detailed game plan before I cross the threshold of the door. Think about football. If the quarterback knows who they're going to make the throw to and where that person is going to be on the field, they're set up to make a great play. When you're sitting in the car and you get that call for the cardiac arrest, start making your game plan. Hand out those roles. Who's going to play what? How are they going to do it? Where are you going to pass the ball to? I'm going to handle the airway. Are you good with prepping the AED? Do you want to start compressions? Have that plan. Make sure it's solid and move into your call and execute a great play. Now, that being said, a game plan's not concrete. You got to be flexible. Maybe it comes in as a heart attack. You come blasting in there and there's a sprained ankle. You never know what you're going to come across, so try and stay flexible with this. Talking about a game plan when you're a student, because this is a bit of a different transition to make. When you're a student, when you're going into the call with your training officer or your preceptor, you need a game plan. Know what's expected of you on the call. You're going to be observing and helping with the equipment, or are you actually going to be running this call? What happens if you get stuck or you need help? before you go into the call, you got to have those questions answered. Talk to your preceptor about it. All right, I'd really like to try and take the lead on this call, but if I get stuck, I'm going to ask you to borrow your pen, and that means I need your help. And would you be able to step in this way and take over the assessment? Right, and have that worked out in advance so that you can really smoothly transition into what you're doing. One of the very biggest ways you can create order on a scene and instill who's in charge and keep control is your communication strategy. What you say and how you say it goes a really long way. You hear that all over the place in life, but if it's done well, it can create a calm scene or it can raise a stress level. When you enter a scene, I always like to start off by introducing myself. I usually use firm and calm communication. Hey, I'm Sarah. This is my partner, John. We're paramedics from Ambulance Service XYZ. We're here to help you. Would you mind having a seat for me, sir? Or how can I help you today? Just coming in nice and calm, regardless of your environment, with a controlled voice really helps set the tone. And remember, your emotion shows in your voice. It's not easy to hide, and you can feed a patient's anxiety or be the thing that calms them down, depending on how you actually control your voice. It can sometimes even help you keep calm. I know sometimes when I'm extra stressed on a call, I take a minute, I take a breath, and I actually try and lower my voice. And that helps kind of center myself and calm things back down. One thing you got to remember about communication is humans are hardwired to try and fit into the environment around them. It's why when you walk into a really loud conversation at the bar and everybody's speaking very animatedly and their tone's all over the place, their volume's up, and you walk into that with the same energy, you match that. If you found yourself whispering and said to the other person, "Why are we whispering?" Well, this is because we try and fit in the environment we're in. Literally setting the tone of a conversation can de-escalate emotional and high-stress situations. And this helps restore order on a crazy scene. The ability to control your voice, in my opinion, and this is a bit of a crazy statement, but is one of the most important skills I think a medic can have in terms of soft skills. Communication strategy number two, you gotta keep it clear. You've talked about this game plan, but now that you're out on the playing field, how have you communicated your plan to your team? Let's say you got a 500-pound bariatric patient that you got to get out of the house. It's going to take a big team and a lot of coordination to do it. Have you communicated your plan? Does everyone know what their role is, and do they know what the play is? Most importantly, did you tell your patient? Because they should be part of your team as well, and you should always keep them in the loop. I took an ACLS course, and one of the things they brought up is closed-loop communication. And what that really means is it's a fancy way of saying a leader really clearly states what they want to the person that they want to do it, and the person who's going to do it confirms back to them. So, Joe, can you please start an 18-gauge IV, then bolus in 500 of normal saline? And then Joe's going to come back to me and say, "All right, I've done that." And then I can check that off the list. I've closed the loop of communication there. Ever see a great doc run a code? You come in, everybody knows what they're doing. They're very clearly addressing each other by name. Nobody's crazy. There's no yelling. It's a well-oiled machine. And if you really listen, it's communication that gets that done. The doc's got a very, very clear game plan. He's sharing it with his team and making sure that it's being executed appropriately with a closed-loop communication style. Let's talk about the noisy signal. When you get onto a scene, it should be calm. Keep your communication concise, succinct, and not cluttered. What I mean by this is one person gets to talk at a time. Yeah, it's kindergarten rules, and you gotta wait your turn. So if at all possible, I like one person to be running the show, and really one person to take the lead on being the communication point with that patient. Too many chefs in the kitchen leads to all kinds of chaos, or worse, somebody getting hurt. I mean, think back to our 500-pound patient. We're going to put him on this lifting device, and we've got to move him from point A to point B. We've got a lot of potential to hurt this patient, to hurt the crews that are on scene. So I like to communicate out loud what my game plan is, and I'm going to take charge by doing it. I'm going to very calmly yet firmly state, all right, so we're going to put Bob here on the lifting device. We're going to put four people on each side, make our way down the stairs to the stretcher. Then I make eye contact with the whole team, and I ask them, does everybody understand? Does anybody have any questions? And then I always take some time to say, if at any point you see something that's a safety concern, say stop. Now I take the time to prep my entire team, and this means my patient. I say, Joe, we're going to put you on this special lifting mat. It's going to help us move you safely outside, okay? So we're going to put you on here, take you down those stairs, and then we're going to put you on our bed. And the most important thing that I need from you is to keep your arms in and tight, okay? Joe, do you have any questions about what we're going to do? All right, let's get started. And then we execute the plan. Everybody's clear. They're on the same page. One person's in charge. You don't got signals crossing over, different people saying one thing versus another thing. And it really takes out any possibility for error or confusion. Now that we're on the scene, we've got our game plan, we're communicating with other teams, what do we do when other people enter our scene? One of the most important things I like to do is acknowledge other crews or different organizations. Maybe it's police who are showing up, maybe it's the fire department. Acknowledge them when they come on the scene. It gives you an opportunity to introduce yourself, give them a rundown of what's going on. And just by doing this, it really subtly establishes you're running the show, this is what we're going to do, and this is exactly how we're going to do it. And by doing that, every person that comes on the scene knows what's happening, and they don't go off and do their own thing. There's no freelancing. So we've talked about how to prep the game plan when you're going in, how to communicate with your team as you're going through. We've talked about how to talk to extra people that come on your scene. Now let's talk about assumptions. This is a part of communication where we need to make it very, very clear. In my opinion, assumptions are deadly. There's all these silly little sayings about how assuming something makes an ass out of you and me. Well, this is an emergency setting, and assumptions are actually deadly. Okay, if you assume traffic's blocked and you step out of traffic and get smoked by a semi-truck, that's a deadly mistake. All right, the same thing with, you know, maybe the medication that you've been requested to give or anything along those lines, just don't assume it. When it comes to communication, if you're not sure, say it out loud, ask something, and don't be afraid to check back in, okay? This is part of that closed loop communication. So if you are the person who's doing the assigning, you make sure that you're watching that these tasks are getting done appropriately, that they're once you've delegated them, and then you're checking back in that it's getting done. All right, close that loop. Now, one way that this can be really troubling is when you're a student. One of the toughest transitions to make is from the classroom to the street. When you're in school, keep in mind they are marking you. Of course they want to watch you make choices. They want you to see how you're going to handle that scene. They want to see what you do when the person loses their pulse or they stop breathing. They don't want to know what your entire team can do. They want to know what you can do. That's how they mark you. In the real world, it's not one medic getting marked. It's an entire team making a play to try and provide the best patient care that you can. All right? So no assumptions when you're a student. Speak up. Make sure you're really clear and make sure that it's a team effort. I want to talk about a couple of specific instances that just turn into scene disasters. So you walk onto your scene, it's like a bad episode of Jerry Springer. People are arguing, there's a TV blasting, kids are crying, there's like 1,000 people in the room. How do you restore order to your proverbial courtroom? First thing you need to do, first and foremost before anything else, is you have to very rapidly assess this scene and make sure that it's safe for you to be in the first place. Is this an unsafe scene or is it just obnoxious? If it's not safe, get the hell out. If it is safe, time to get to work. I always start by introducing myself as a paramedic. I introduce myself and my partner by name. I always start with this. It's respectful. Okay? And everything that we do, especially when we're dealing with difficult scenes or disorderly scenes, it starts and ends with respect. You gotta be polite. Before you ask for anything, remember that you're a guest in this person's home, and if they need an ambulance, they're obviously not having the greatest of days. So if you ask politely, most of the time you can get what you want. Remember your manners. Please and thank you goes a really long way on a call. First things first, lights on, right? This is your office. You don't work in the dark. If you can, get some lights on. If you don't have lights on, maybe you're working outside, get somebody to find some lights. Get your on-scene lights for the ambulance. Maybe get a flashlight out or a headlamp. Light some flares. Do what you got to do to make this a hospitable working environment. Next thing, cut the noise, turn the TV off. I have run many a cardiac arrest where I walk into the living room and there's this guy laying on the floor and someone's doing CPR and the TV is blaring. Well, the first thing I do to actually restore order in that room is I introduce myself, I walk in, I take over, I get to work, and I get somebody to turn the TV off, okay? Instantly, the scene goes from really, really high stress, and it cuts out that background noise. It lets me clear my head and get the work done that I need to do. Next thing, now, this is a pet peeve of mine, drives me nuts. Come racing down for a call, you get there, the patient's on their phone. Nothing tells me that this is a high acuity call like the patient's on their phone. So here, despite my frustration, I always lead with being respectful and polite and an introduction. I make sure that the patient knows that I'm here and give them a few seconds to get off the phone. You know, maybe they're just telling mom and dad that they wrecked mom and dad's car and they need a second before they get off the phone. So I give them that. If they still don't get off the phone, I get a little bit more firm with them and I try and start establishing myself on the scene. And I always, I'm very polite. I use ma'am and sir. Or if I have a name, I address them by that. And I say, ma'am, were you the one who called an ambulance? And how can we help you today? And sometimes that's enough to trigger them to just get off that phone and redirect their attention back to you. If it doesn't work, I got to get a little bit more firm because it's ridiculous to have an ambulance sitting there while they're chatting on the phone. So, ma'am, we'd really like to help you, but we're not able to do so if you're on your phone. Would you be able to call this person back later? Again, a little bit of respect and being polite goes a very long way. All right, if that still doesn't work, then you got to get a lot more firm, and that's really up to your discretion on the scene. So the next thing, we're making our office a hospitable environment for us to work. Make a little bit of room. We've got the lights on. We've got the TV off. We've got our obnoxious patient off the phone. Now let's make a little bit of room for our work. Now remember, be gentle. There's no need to ever damage patient property. But there's nothing wrong with moving a coffee table out of your way. But I always let the people know whose house that I'm in that I'm going to do it. Ma'am, is it all right if I move the coffee table out so that we can just get a little more room to work to help your husband? All right, so there's a whole bunch of people on scene. This leads to a very chaotic scene, and it can also lead to an unsafe scene. And this is where you kind of need a bit of a bouncer. I always like to ask people to give you some room because I want to help their friend. I just explain what I'm doing to the group. All right, I need to get in here and I need to help them, okay? So if you guys can give us a little bit of space, I'll be able to help them better, okay? Now, if they're still not getting out of the way and you're not able to perform your assessment, you need to actually start finding tactics to move them out of the way. And some of these people, you gotta understand, they're so concerned that their friend is sick or hurt or whatever they are, that they might get in the way of your job. They might also have a rather negative energy about how they show their concern. What I always think about this is that angry people on scene, they just want you to give them a job. What I like to do is I give them a totally meaningless task, and it redirects their energy towards something else. It helps them feel like they're contributing, and it gets them out of your hair long enough so that you can actually assess the patient. My top favorite activities for angry people to do are holding stretchers, IV bags, or even crowd control. Totally gets them out of my way, gives them something to do, and usually they direct all that other energy into the task at hand, and you'd be surprised how well this works. Now, the overbearing family member. This is a bit of a toughie. You gotta work as a bit of a tag team, and this is where it really helps if you know your partner. Have you ever been trying to get a history from a patient, and all you have is their spouse answering for them? This one drives me a little bit crazy, because all I want to do is get the history from my patient. Sure, it's great to see what the family saw and understand that aspect of it, but what I really want to know is what the patient felt and how they felt that, so that I can start actually helping them. So what I like to do when we've got that spouse that's cutting in and trying to answer for them, is I say, thank you. That's really great to know. And I've got some questions I need to ask your husband, and I need him to answer them for me. And usually, that'll get rid of some of them. Now, if they're still not letting the husband answer, they keep, you know, cutting in and not letting him get a word in edgewise, and suddenly they're describing his chest pain as sharp instead of him, well, that's when you need to escalate things a little bit. Usually I try and just let them know again, all right, I really need to know what your husband feels this pain as. Just give us a second for him to answer. Thank you. And again, I keep it respectful and polite. All right, let's say this doesn't work. Your next line of defense, like the angry patient, give them a job. Get them out of your hair, and preferably when you give them the job, send them out of the room. Would you be able to get me his medications? Awesome. Does he have a coat or any shoes that he would need to go to the hospital with? Excellent. Well, thank you so much. Would you mind grabbing those for us? And shoo them out of the room, quickly assess your patient, and then move on. Now, they are still persisting. This is where the tag team really comes into play. If you just can't get them to can it, and they're like Speedy Gonzales when they're doing all these tasks for you, getting the meds and all that, you got to get your partner to run interference. Ms. Smith, would you be able to tell my partner exactly what you saw today? I kind of give my partner a look, and usually that's enough for them to lead them out of the room, preferably well out of earshot, so that I can finally talk to my patient. So those are some tips on how to deal with a bit of a rowdy scene. Some of these work great, and some of them might not work. It really all depends on what you're doing. But if all else fails, fall back. If you can't make the scene workable, i.e. hear your patient, you got to get out of there because you can't provide quality patient care. So you got to move back out to the ambulance. And at the end of the day, there's nothing wrong with that. If you have to do it, then do it. So to sum up, we talked about controlling a scene starts with a game plan. Right? Like a well-oiled sports team, going in together with everybody knowing their role and having that play in mind leads to really good patient care. The next thing is communication. It's the single biggest way to create order on your scene is to communicate clearly, communicate calmly. Don't let that emotion crawl into your voice. And use closed-loop communication. Give very specific directions to specific people. Joe, can you start that IV for me? Joe says, yes, I can. And then Joe lets you know when he's done that. Keep the communication clear and free of clutter. Make sure only one person is talking to that patient. Express your game plan. Don't keep your strategy a secret. Remember, it's a team sport. Remember that assumptions are deadly. If you've got a question, say it out loud. If you're not sure what somebody's doing, don't be afraid to check back in with them. Restoring order your environment. Do what you can to make your office clean. You gotta be able to assess your patient in a way where you can actually figure out what's going on. When people are freaking out and yelling, remember things like turning the lights on, turning the TV off, getting your patient off the phone, clearing the room of extra people, make a little bit of extra room to work, give those angry people some jobs, and remember to tag team with your partner. And if all else fails, fall back to your ambulance. I hope we've given you a few new ideas to think about and something to try on your next shift. I want to thank you for taking the time to listen today. And remember, check out our website, rookiemed.ca, for our show notes. They aren't just bullet points and links. They're a comprehensive set of notes prepared specifically for you, the rookie. It covers everything we talked about on the show in detail. Make sure to subscribe to the Rookie Med podcast so you don't miss new episodes. See you later, rookies.